The Holy Gospel according to John in the 11th chapter, the raising of Lazarus. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me. But I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. May the peace of the Lord be with you now and always. Amen. Before May and I settled here in Salem, we moved with my mother back to Portland, just as a way stop, so that I could complete my 12-week clinical pastoral education internship, which is basically seminary speak for chaplain internship and pastoral identity development course. It was intense, to say the least, on multiple different levels. Simply being at a level one trauma center, right, with Emmanuel, Randall Children's Hospital, and the Oregon Burn Center all on the same campus, that was enough to fill each day. And I was trying to settle back into a mainland pace of life, a mainland flow, and a mainland culture that I'd been away from for many years. These all added this extra layer of intrigue to my summer. I went to class for 2 days a week, and then I had to book myself into 12-hour shifts across the week, including one 12-hour overnight shift. Overnight meaning from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., and it could fall on any day of the week. And I saw it all. I was present with people at their most vulnerable, at the end of their lives, at the beginning of life, at the tragic beginnings that sometimes were an end. And during my time in the emergency department, I was with people facing all types of trauma in real time. Now, I've seen things I'd wish I'd never seen, and I'm also very grateful for having seen them. Everything worked to open up my pastoral heart and grounded me deeply into the fabric of what matters, what is important, and what it is that faith brings to the table, ready or not, willing or not. I experienced being a certain type of person for people in need, and all along the entire spectrum of spiritual belief. The gospel for today out of John, the raising of Lazarus, it triggers in me all these memories of CPE and memories of my own loss. It is also one of my favorite experiences of Jesus in general. And so as I was preparing for this sermon and reading the text, studying the text, this memory from my first death in the emergency department during my first overnight shift, only 3 weeks into my CPE program, it kept coming up. And so if you'll indulge me for a moment, I want to relive that I came on at 7 p.m., and by 7:10, my pager was going off, calling me down to the ED. And when I arrived, the chaplain who was on before me was still there, which is quite uncommon because usually we do a handoff in the spiritual care office where we go over the happenings since the 7 o'clock shift came on in the morning and if there were any immediate care needs that needed attention right away. What we did that night was called a hot handoff. And so Dionysus and I stood outside the consult room of the emergency department, and he proceeded to fill me in on the bits that he knew. It wasn't good. None of it was good. He said, when you walk in, the daughter will still be in the middle of an interview with about 4 police officers. And eventually, you will need to facilitate the family in seeing their loved one across the way. And as he said this, he pointed to room 1. He said, it is pretty intense. There's a lot going on. And the emergency room doc isn't even going to come to discuss with the family what happened until you got there. At this time, the family doesn't even know that their loved one is dead. They just know that he was here. He handed me the on-call phone, his notes, and said, have a good shift, and I hope you can get some rest tonight. Then turned on his heel, and the reality that I was the only chaplain on the entire campus hit me hard. I remember being almost unable to turn the knob on the door, but I heard the voices in the room, and so I did. Now, long story short, I didn't get back to the office nor unpack my overnight stuff in the on-call room until almost 2:30 that morning. This case was a murder case. A father was dead. His daughter had witnessed it. It was violent. It was sudden. The perpetrators were on the run, and the police were still actively searching for them. And I escorted what felt like the entire extended family to room 1 to view their father, brother, son, cousin, and friend for the last time. I held hands. I held doors. I even caught the wailing mother as she collapsed towards the floor, having lost her last son in this violent way. I learned of the difficult family dynamics, many years in the making. And at the end of the night, I was sitting with the family members who would be the ones to take responsibility for the next steps, because they were the only ones capable to do so, or at least the only ones able to cope with it at the moment. Now, this was not the hardest night I would have. There were other nights during CPE that were much more difficult, much more intense. But because this was the first, I think it stuck with me. Death stuck with me all summer. I was the only one in my cohort who had a consistent room 1 experience or multiple family member interactions around traumatic death for most of the CPE unit. Some members of my cohort didn't even know where room 1 was until we hit midterms. I have cried all the way home multiple mornings or nights, having to open my car windows to let the air in just to remind myself to breathe. I've been unable to shake images or people's voices. I feel like I've almost been traumatized in some ways. And yet, my faith has also been firmly grounded, and my heart has been broken open for all the right reasons. Which brings me to Lazarus. Now, I want to ground you a bit in this section because we don't read it completely. We're missing the first part and the last part. We've read today the messy middle, if I dare to title it that. See, we're missing the part in the beginning of the chapter where Jesus is told of Lazarus and his illness, and he doesn't beat feet to get there. And we're missing the part where Martha tells Jesus the same thing that Mary does. Lord, if you had been here, he would not have died. And we're missing the last part of the chapter where the Pharisees and the chief priests, basically the entire Sanhedrin, meets and begins to conspire to kill Jesus. So in between this scene, we read what we read today. And here's where I hope to break open the word a bit, which of course includes a little Greek word study and some teaching. And I hope a whole lot for you to take away and chew on for yourselves for the week coming. There are three pieces in that scene that make it one of my favorite chapters in John. The first, Jesus having great emotions. Second, the promises kept. And third, a certain earthiness we don't often experience in the Gospel of John. The Gospel of John is more about the Christ, right? It's this sense of Jesus floating a little bit above the ground in all his grandeur. But here, in the middle of John's grand gospel, we tend to get this more earthy Jesus, one that we're used to reading maybe in some of the other gospel stories. We see Jesus enfleshed completely, even if for just a few moments. CPE was similar to this for me, full of emotions and a sense of searching for answers to promises made, and very much deeply connected with earthiness, of being surrounded by bodies and all that means in a hospital setting. You see, Jesus only weeps three times, or at least we only hear about three times. I'm sure he wept more during his life. But the three times we hear about were once while looking over Jerusalem from afar, once in the Garden of Gethsemane before his crucifixion, and once here with Mary and Martha and the crowd at the tomb of Lazarus. The Greek word for this crying, this weeping, is dakruo, meaning to shed tears silently. But this is juxtaposed against this other Greek word, embryaomehi, which means to be filled with anger and agitation, to be agitated and disturbed. Remember, the gospel said he was disturbed in his spirit. The internal was becoming external. In the text, Jesus is filled with this agitation and anger before he weeps, and again when he comes to the tomb. Talk about a classic scene of grief played out in many hospital rooms, being played out right now, I guarantee you. And here we have Jesus finding a sense of this same human experience, the flood of emotions, some of them displaced and unbalanced at the moment. Scholars now are unsure and likely to argue about why Jesus would have such an anger-filled reaction. But that's a sermon for another day. Put simply, I've heard similar words spoken to me. Why did this happen? If I had only, he would still be here. I should have. I could have. This sense of anger and yearning for the world to be different than the one you are experiencing at the moment. And then there is the weeping, often so deeply moving that the person weeping isn't even making a sound, right? This deep grief when the tears are just shed in a flood that is uncontrollable. I've had to maintain space for anger and rage, for sadness and loss, for disbelief and outright denial, for loud and silent weeping. And I am sure each of you have had similar experiences as well. Can you feel that here in this story today? Can you imagine the scene better in that way? And Jesus just asked the stone to be moved away. And still Martha isn't ready to believe. She's not there yet. She warns him of the stench of 4 days that a corpse will give. She doesn't yet see. Jesus is showing us once again that promises that were made will be kept. but they're not going to be kept always on the timelines or in the ways that we want them to, because Jesus is living in what we call Kairos time, and we are blind to that time. We are as blind to that time and rage against it as much as we do as we rage against when we don't know what's happening just in our daily lives. This is why I believe that the lectionary designers have paired this gospel with the text that we read out of Revelation. Remember? The new heaven and earth, the Alpha and the Omega, the God dwelling down with the mortals in the absence of pain and suffering and the absence of death itself. Those are the promises that we have been extended, and they are the promises that are being kept right now. They are the promises that all the saints that we will pray for in a little bit have already witnessed for themselves. Which brings us to Lazarus again and his walking out of the tomb, still in his grave clothes. Now, you might have noticed that there are small strips of cloth placed in the pews. And I don't know if I've made enough for everyone, but you can share. And I want you to ground yourself into what it meant to have grave clothes on. These are to represent the bindings that were removed from Lazarus. And I hope that they will remain as a reminder of the work that is done in community to unbind him from his death clothes. Hold these in your hand and connect with them a moment. You see, Lazarus was unable to unbind himself. Jesus asked for the community to come and help remove the last vestiges of death from him. Think of what that would have been like, to remove strips of cloth 4 days wrapped around his dead and decaying body. Now, I know that oil and spices can do some work, but oil and spices can't do that much work. This is dirty work. This is earthy work. Jesus calls for the community to join in the returning of Lazarus to the community of life. This is freedom work. And this is the lesson for us today as well. We cannot unbind ourselves. We need both the Lord and those who live in community with us. It can't just be one or the other. That is why the work of the hospital chaplain also must be done in community. No one will ever remember my name or even what I said or didn't say to them during my time as a chaplain. But I am positive that they will remember that I was there to witness with them, to hold space for them in their own witnessing of the unbinding of a body, a release into the great mystery of death, where all the saints, including those we are missing today in our own hearts, are waiting for us, waiting for the moment when we return to God, the very place where we all began, the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega, the new heaven and the new earth. In the meantime, get greatly disturbed in spirit together. Call out to Jesus your complaints. Weep together. Roll away the stones together. Sit at the feet of Jesus together. Unbind each other. Because the promised gift of the cross was that it tore the veil between God and us forever, unbinding the entire world, bringing into that same world salvation through grace and faith alone in the one who is the three who is the one. Lazarus, come out. And the community of saints that is Christ the Good Shepherd, unbind him and let him go. Thanks be to God. Amen.